Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Na-na-na-na-na-na, I want to tell you a story. Na-na-na-na-na-na, about a podcast I know. Na-na-na-na-na-na, it's the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Welcome to this missive from the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's hottest weekly tech podcast, drifting into your head every Friday like the first big weekend of the summer. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment enema from the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK and Computerworld UK. Every Friday, we get the workers of France to down their audio tools and go out on an audio strike protesting against the 12-hour week, standing by an audio brazier, preventing audio ferries from docking in audio ports and setting fire to audio sheep in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. Too much, do you think?
Yeah,
you know, it's on topic because of the European Championships. Please don't forget to subscribe, review, and tell your friends. I am Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by the always fun Lewis Painter, Staff Writer at PC Advisor.
Hello.
The always fiery Henry Burrell, Staff Writer of Macworld UK.
Bonjour.
And the always look on the bright side of life, David Price, Acting Editor of Macworld UK.
All right.
This week we're talking Apple, Oculus, and Electoral Doom. Fly, my pretties, fly! Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Henry Burrell, why for some voters did WWW mean worst website woe?
Well, it was news to me because, sensible as I am, I used this website and I thought it was very good. But it brings up a... If we were to shoehorn a techie vibe around it, the website broke, the EU referendum sign-up website, which was very easy to use. It was almost like just signing up to an app, really, which kind of nullifies the whole point of it slightly.
So this was a website to which people who weren't currently on the electoral roll could go and sign up for the upcoming EU referendum.
Indeed. So, yeah, for me, I wasn't registered. I moved house in the past year and hadn't actually registered. So it was very easy. You just pretty much put in your details, national insurance number, and it's all sorted. It's very, very easy. But the website crashed just before the deadline, which was the 7th of June.
Sure.
So it's been extended now by 48 hours, just because the government has had to admit that their website wasn't up to the traffic.
So there was a couple of hours on the evening of that day when the site was basically...
Yeah, when 99% of the country...
tried to register.
Yeah.
And there was basically this point at which... way too many people for the site infrastructure were trying to get on, and it fell over.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when everyone's trying to buy a gig ticket at the same time, in or out of
the most boring gig of all time.
It wouldn't be good, would it? I don't know the headline it would be, but
hey, I for one hope that there isn't an encore. And also, encore is French, so
encore une fois. Remember the Brexit pop gig?
Yeah, it didn't happen, did it, in the end?
It was a real, real sham.
Because
they found out what it was about.
Didn't realise it was a Brexit gig. Yeah. Okay, so returning to the tech side of things, I thought this was quite an interesting story because it outlines the fact that online is always extremely convenient.
Mm.
But for instance, there's a bit of a debate currently about online voting. It sort of makes sense that you should be able to, as you say, easily, because your national insurance number is a unique identifier, so you can only register once. That, you know, it ought to be the case that people could vote online. But is this kind of thing an argument against that, do we think?
It could be in some ways. I think when people talk about turnout for elections, and it's always depressingly low in major Western countries, I think the last general election was maybe approaching 2/3 turnout, which is quite good. But there's still people ask, why don't people vote? And is it because it's too hard? I don't think so. Is it because they don't engage with politics? I think that I've found it much easier to register to vote than if I'd had to do it manually. But I don't think that's going to change whether people vote or not.
I was just thinking as you were speaking then, I don't know how I'm registered. I am registered. I presume it's to do with paying council tax.
Yeah, I'm in the same position. I thought my wife had registered me. but then as you were saying about the electoral roll, I am already on it. So that must be why I'm allowed to vote. But it's a bit of a mystery.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing that we're not sure. I think we're all going to vote. But I think the fact that it's unclear, I don't think making it digital makes it any better.
And I think it highlights the number of people that didn't register.
Yeah.
I think if it had been any other system, there still would have been massive logistical problems.
Yeah.
It's just it wouldn't have been shown up in such a clear way as a website falling over. It would just have been, some people didn't send it in quite quick enough. The post didn't deliver them quickly enough, whatever else. Some, civil servant lost some or whatever.
Well, I should say that in the most recent local elections, which were entirely...
Barnet.
Exactly.
In my local
your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
There were all sorts of problems there with people just not being registered manually.
Yeah.
And, I had the experience in my little hamlet that when I went to vote, I didn't have my card with me because you don't have to take the card. And I just had to say my name and my address. But it was clear the list of people eligible to vote was clearly visible to me. So I could have just been like, yes, I am Mrs. Smith and I live at 12 Park Road. So it's not as if the current system is entirely flawless. It also got me thinking about, so you mentioned there are a couple of things where websites have been overwhelmed. So the convenience, the principle of it all working really well has ended up going quite terribly. I had a few different examples on my list. In the US, when the Obamacare, quite controversial to them, although it seems really odd to us, but the idea of some sort of social security healthcare went live, absolute disaster because so many people wanted to register. Actually, a good thing sort of politically for Obama, but a disaster from a technical point of view. Does everybody remember the 2012 Olympics ticket website? Because that was a total shambles.
I got nothing in the first round. Yeah.
Nobody sort of did. It just kind of fell over and broke. One that's close to my heart, when we stopped having to use tax discs. So again, it's broadly similar situation. Instead of having to have a piece of paper stuck to your car, which is kind of was always a bit of a point in the system. Now you just have to tax your car online and there's a register of all the cars, and if it's not taxed, then the taxman comes after you. But when we first switched that in 2014, the whole system just fell over. Same sort of thing.
But it's like, what it reminds me of is, when we get snow and the train...
I am aware
stops.
Of it.
and it all stops and people always go, in Norway, they have much worse snow. And they seem to cope with that all right. And, of course, the fact is that in Norway, because they have snow all the time, then it's economically viable for them to get all the machinery.
How do they cope with drizzles, eh?
Well, exactly. But they have it all the time, so they have the machinery. We only have heavy snow very rarely, so we have trouble dealing with the sudden change from normal weather to heavy snow. And in the same way, nobody can really engineer a site so that it can cope with 500,000... hits at the same time when it would not get that any of the other time.
Yeah, it's kind of like a DDoS attack.
Like we get on iPhone launches, for example, is that there will always be some issues.
Yeah, that's true.
Sustaining that traffic.
The interesting thing to be, and we'll never find out because this is the way government digital stuff works, you just do never find out, but that's a really good example. So we know the next subject we're coming on to, WWDC. Whenever Apple's announcing something, Macworld UK does get a huge amount of traffic, but we also mitigate for that, and we have all sorts of technical things that happen in order to allow at least most of that traffic to get through. It'd just be interesting to know, because the suspicion from the outside, and this is something like Computer World covers a lot, is that government doesn't necessarily think in that consumer-driven way about its audience.
because they don't have to particularly, because there's no competition. Yeah. It kind of intrigued me that there was this deadline of June the 7th and then they could extend it by 48 hours, which suggests to me that there didn't need to be a deadline in the first place.
Well, yeah. There needs to be sort of...
There needs to be a cut-off
you
point.
You pick an arbitrary cut-off point, and yeah. In this case there...
But there was at least 48 hours worth of grace in that, I guess.
Yeah.
Because they knew it wouldn't work properly.
Possibly, yeah, possibly.
I mean, there's also the political element. The thought that the people who register at the last minute, are they more predisposed to vote for status quo, perhaps? You know, because people who want change are generally more motivated.
That's what I was thinking about that as well. And I don't know if there's any truth in this. It was just something that I was thinking. And the whole process of having to vote in the past is admittedly slightly laborious, but only in light of there being perceivably easier options when it's digitised. But I thought maybe the simplicity and the digital nature of signing up to vote, I just hope it doesn't trivialise the importance of the choice.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the problem I have, I'm not being the most political person, but it's so binary these days. You have, it's not really like, you know, Labour or Conservative. There should be a lot more thought put into why you're picking a choice, like a decision. And then this whole the way the media's taken it, I mean, I know that you can only vote Leave or Remain, but I mean, I don't think I could explain exactly why I will vote the way I vote, and that's a little bit scary. And I just don't want the digitisation of it all to make it any worse.
Well, from a tech point of view, the example there is Australia, where everybody has to vote, and you can vote via digital means, and it's awful. Literally, on the day of an election, you have to vote. If you don't vote, it's a criminal act, essentially. Mm. If you're eligible to vote. And literally on the day of election, you will get local candidates driving people to the place where they can vote, offering them chips or, you know, a meal. Honestly, they're not supposed to, but it happens.
Yeah.
Because
how does that work with anonymous voting? How do they know that they've done their end of the deal?
I don't know. So do we think then that the convenience of online is great, therefore we should be pushing to do more of these things? I was thinking about stuff like the passport office, you know, which, if it works, it's great. You get your passport in a certain length of time. DVLA is the same thing, your driver's license. Yeah. If anything goes wrong, though, you're not speaking to a human, and it's much more difficult to resolve.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong in a bit of human contact. You need somebody to just, like, yeah. They can see your face, you're not lying, you're that person, and it just gets done.
Yeah.
I think... democracy in whatever form has managed without it this far. I think it's good to like sign up to this sort of thing, but I still don't think you should be able to vote online in this country.
Interesting.
I like the way they do it in the Night's Watch.
Oh, and
they have the triangles and they put the one that is Labicus. Then everybody can see who's going to be the Lord Commander.
I don't know what that is.
Is it a board game? What are you talking about?
It's Game of Thrones.
Oh.
Game of Thrones. Thrones, right? So it's not a democracy anyway, is it?
Well,
no. It's not Game of...
The Night's Watch is a democracy, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I think we should digitise this stuff. I think it's about time. We could use the blockchain. That's something we've talked about before.
It is indeed.
That increases the accountability of everything.
I'm glad this foam screen's here between you and Henry in case you start leaping at each other and tearing at it.
Because of our political differences.
Yes. Okay, let's resolve this. Let's go around the room. The site is right, or... The Luddites were right. Get that sight out of my sight. Right. Henry.
The latter.
The Luddites were right. Get that sight out of my sight. Right. David Price.
The sight is right.
The sight is right. Lewis Painter.
The sight is right.
Interesting stuff. Okay, we'll take a short break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about games. Silly games. Silly games! Silly games! Lewis Painter, we've given big props to the HTC Vive Pre on this pod, but you've been spending time with Oculus Rift. How was it?
It was interesting. Because we've spent so much time with the HTC Vive recently, I feel like I kind of spoiled the VR experience for myself a little bit. Because,
interesting.
I mean, in my opinion, the HTC Vive is the best one that you can get at the moment, because you can walk around in the environment, you can, you know, reach out and touch things and all this kind of stuff, and it's all great. The Oculus Rift, on the other hand, is standing only or slash sitting, and you have an Xbox
slash
One
sitting.
Slash sitting. And yeah, you just use an Xbox One controller, so it's just like a standard game where you just kind of look around. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. because I can't imagine, you know, a very immersive game being just standing still.
But this is really interesting because I expected you to come bouncing back from your Oculus experience in the same way as you've been so excited by HTC Vive 3. Yeah. And not least because Oculus kicked off this whole most recent VR.
Yeah, I know. I've been rooting for Oculus for a long time. And I think they will be able to compete with the Vive once the Oculus Touch controllers come out, which is supposed to be the end of this year. And that will enable the kind of functionality that the Vive has, where you can reach out and touch things and, you know, actually shoot things with your hands instead of using an Xbox controller. And the founder of Oculus has claimed that the Rift can do room scale tracking, but on a smaller scale than the Vive can do. But they're not saying much about it at the moment, because what's the point when you've got an Xbox controller?
Yeah.
But I imagine that by the end of this year, once the touch controllers come out, it will be better. And I think I want to revisit it once, you know, everything's available, because at the moment, I don't think it's the full Oculus package.
But then what's happened here then? How did HTC manage to steal this march on Oculus?
Well, I've been thinking about this recently, because it was for ages, it was just Oculus, Oculus, Oculus. And we never really heard anything about, you know, the Vive until HTC stood on stage and was like, guys, here we are, look at this. Yeah. And then, I mean, I know Oculus has announced the touch controllers. They announced it when they announced the consumer version of the headset. They announced them both at the same time. So that's always been there. But I think it's a combination of things. Oculus did take a while developing the headset as well. And it's all very...
A long while, really.
A very long time, yeah.
Did they just have less resources then, because they're a smaller company?
They got bought out by Facebook. So going back to, you know, yesterday when I did go hands-on with it, there were some surprises, because obviously we've used the Vive for quite a while. The Rift headset is a lot lighter than the Vive, which is, you know, provides a more comfortable experience, but there are some downsides as well, because you can see a gap out the bottom of the headset, so you can see the floor.
That's not immersive.
That is not immersive. And so, you know, the display is really high res, you know, it's a really nice display when you're, it's really clear, but if you can see a gap by your nose and you can see the floor, you're never going to have that full immersion. And I just didn't think the fit was quite as nice as the Vive provided, but the
but it's cheaper, right? Isn't it?
It's £189 cheaper.
So they are going for a more accessible level, and you have to expect less of a luxury product, I suppose.
But when you're comparing price tags, I don't think £189 difference is justifiable for something, you know, something as amazing as the Vive, and then compared to the Rift.
Yeah.
I just don't think that kind of price. I mean, if the Rift was £350, maybe, you know, I'd kind of be like, yeah, fair play, because that's the kind of price that the PlayStation VR is going to be when that comes out later this year. But for £500, I'm expecting a little bit.
Well, you never want to be in the middle of one of those things. You either want to be the most expensive, that's brilliant, or the cheap option. You don't want to be in the middle. There's neither. What about other costs that go with it from a PC perspective? Is it the same as HTC?
Funnily enough, it has higher requirements than the Vive does,
right?
Which I felt was fascinating. You need at least 8 gig of RAM to run the Oculus Rift, whereas you need 4 gig minimum to run the Vive. And then the Rift also requires USB 3, whereas the Vive requires USB 2. So all in all, the Rift requires stronger hardware for something that's not as good.
And what about the game support? Because I've read a couple of things about
Oculus, it's kind of
mucking up the game store. Or
it's going to be another console war. It's essentially PlayStation versus Xbox. You're going to have Oculus Oculus Home versus Steam VR.
Yeah,
but it's a little bit confusing because Oculus users can log on to Steam, buy Oculus Rift content, but then HTC Vive users can't go on Oculus Home and use Oculus stuff.
Yeah, but that's because of Oculus, isn't it?
Oculus says it's because of HTC. HTC because it says it's because of Oculus. It's just this massive, confusing thing. And then there was this patch a little while ago that allowed Vive users to play Rift games.
Yeah.
But they've patched that now, so that's...
Well, that was the bit I was talking about, because... So from a... I forget the name now, but essentially that is Oculus deliberately preventing Vive users from accessing Oculus content.
Yeah.
And that just, I was reading that and I was thinking, knowing what you've just described in terms of the pricing, I didn't know about the experience at that point, but that seems like a really dumb move from Oculus, because Oculus would make money from HTC users buying content from the Oculus.
Yeah.
But also, it would also mean that games makers would be more inclined to make stuff for Oculus and put it in the Oculus store. Whereas now, if they can put something into Vive that can be used by Oculus and Vive, they're going to do it that way rather than the other way around.
They're not going to bother doing it.
So all of a sudden, it's another thing chipping away at Oculus that means, why are games makers going to support
that an Oculus has the upper hand in a way because it has more exclusive games and better exclusive games than the HTC Vive does. So it's just this massive kind of situation that you need to analyze, because you've got things like Lucky's Tale and Eve Valkyrie on the Oculus Rift, which are the two biggest exclusive games that it has. But I mean, even those, I mean, I know that Eve Valkyrie is definitely coming to the Vive later on this year. So it'll be interesting to see, once these kind of exclusive barriers are broken down, who survives. And there's also the point of, HTC has done a deal with Valve, the owners of Steam, to be the only Steam VR headset on the market at the moment.
Right.
But when that exclusivity period runs out, it'll be really interesting to see
if other people get involved.
Exactly.
I had a quick go on the Oculus yesterday with Lewis, and I'm not much of a gamer, but I was thinking about it last night, and it was cool, and I could see it was cool, but like Lewis was saying, like, I was spoiled by the HTC, and in a way, it kind of got me thinking that, just like, well, when I was younger, I used to play a lot of handheld games. I used to prefer like playing Tetris to like playing, you know, Grand Theft Auto or whatever, which I know is a very good game, but it seemed to me like.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Oculus had some amazing graphics, but it wasn't actually that immersive, and the experience wasn't as impressive to me as a fairly...
Lewis looks really sad now.
I know.
He's shaking his head and kind of...
But then on the Vive, something like... I can't remember the game with the guns. All those things.
Space Pirates.
Aliens. Space
Alien Pirates, whatever. Yeah. Yeah, but like, that was really cool and probably less graphically impressive to me. And it's almost as if that... I think, like, for consumers, they would prefer the simplicity of some of those Vive games just because they're so immersive. But the barrier to them buying it is like a couple of grand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're completely right, because it's like, why would you ever make anything in black and white now?
Mm.
It's palpably not as accurate, if you like, but you can get as immersive an experience in the right hands. Or, you know, why do we still have paintings when people can use photography? And my experience, I've used Oculus a long time ago when it was sort of a previous build without HD screens. But the thing about the Vive was exactly that. Like, in that alien space shooter kill death game, whatever it was called.
See, it doesn't matter. That's the point.
Immersion was the point.
Yeah,
it was kind of like, oh, this is a really new experience to me, because I do genuinely feel in this world. And I know consciously I'm not, but it was brilliant. It was really
good.
You say
that. I mean, I think on a conscious level, you forget that you're in a room. I feel that when I was working, you know, when I was, especially on the Vive, since I put that headset on, maybe for the first 30 seconds, I felt a bit self-conscious because I knew other people were in the room watching me.
Filming me.
But beyond that, I'm just like, let's go for it. You know, I mean, I remember when I was going hands-on with it before it came out, I played Space Pirates Trainer, whatever it's called. And
Killer Death Alien Shooter.
That thing. And I physically jumped to the side when a bullet was incoming, because I just completely forgot that I was tethered to this headset. And I had this massive cable at the back of my head. And that was almost the second demo unit that I broke. True story.
Does Oculus have the big cable? I was going to ask about that.
Oculus does have a cable, but it's not as bulky as the Rift. Okay. It's just got a single cable kind of running out. It's not as long, though. But I mean, I suppose if you're standing, you don't really need
a long
cable.
Have the... Because that's the other thing with HTC, isn't it? That, again, was impressive to me, was that it's difficult to describe, but the space within which you can move was clear to me as a user inside that experience, but it felt big. It felt like I could move around quite a lot.
Because when you get near the boundaries in the Vive, you get the mesh wire on the long side. Just to let you know, you don't want to go any further in case you bump into the wall, which I've done quite a few times.
What would be quite a good thing to do would be to set it up on the top of this building. So, you know, just to prove that it works. If you go through that mesh, you fall off the end of the building. And we'd film it from the outside. We should
from
do that.
Below, just...
Yeah, exactly.
Can we get some interns to do that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I suppose if you did it outside, it'd be more immersive because you'd feel the wind.
You would feel the wind, that's true, yeah. It'd be interesting, to, as you're plummeting to your certain death, what would be showing on the headset and would you remain immersed in that world?
That's the question. You'd have to
I've
be
got
falling.
A strange falling sensation as I'm
This is very realistic.
There is a simulation for a VR headset. I'm not sure if it's the Vive or the Oculus, but it simulates a plane crash. And you can
what?
No.
And as someone with a fear of flying, I feel like it would either cure me of my fear of flying or
probably not
traumatize me beyond the point of being able to get on a plane again.
Yeah, that's not cool.
So I don't think I'll be doing that. But if they were using that while they fell off the side of the building,
or while they were flying,
while they're flying,
like, that's going to happen, isn't it? Thinking about it. There's going to be VR. You know, sooner VR, or later there'll be VR headsets on planes.
Give you your own personal space,
And you're not supposed to. For exactly that reason. So if you can give someone, it's an entertainment experience, but you feel outside of that confined space. That's actually because the whole point about entertainment on planes is to keep people calm and stop them thinking that they're in a tube hurtling along a mile above the earth.
I can't think of anything worse than 200 businessmen all watching VR porn at 35,000 feet. That sounds horrible.
We've got slightly off topic there, I feel.
Or on topic. Okay, good. Well, let's quickly go around the room, and you have to use these voices, right?
Yeah.
Game on! Or game over. Henry.
Game over.
Ooh, why?
It's your turn.
He looked up really shocked and like, what did I do?
I don't understand. Game on!
Game on! Lewis.
Game on!
I was expecting that. Excellent.
Of course.
Okay, we'll take an extremely short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the other big event that's happening next week. Get Mac! Get Mac! Get Mac to where you once belonged. David Price. Apple, Apple, Apple. Apple, Apple. Apple. WWDC. Apple. Go.
Well, it's funny you should say get Mac, because there might not be any Macs. That's because next week, Monday the 13th of June, we are going to get the start of WWDC, which is Apple's yearly get together for its software developers. So it gets all the people, well, not all of them, there's probably
all the people,
hundreds of thousands of them.
Yeah,
people that make software for the Mac platform or the iPhone or the iPad. In fact, they auction off tickets to this, so only the very luckiest of those people get to come. And then they sort of talk to them about how they're going to change the platform, changes to iOS, changes to Mac OS X, and a few other things. And then they have a week of training seminars and things like that.
Yeah.
And they generally big up their platforms and get everybody enthused about making software for Apple.
And presumably that means, and this is in San Francisco, right?
Yes, it's in San Francisco. So it starts at 10 a.m. Pacific time, but that's 6 p.m. If we've got this right, it's 6 p.m. British time. They obviously, it's one of those things where in theory, it's not for us. In theory, they're talking to these
developers.
But actually, there'll be cameras at the back of the room. They will be streaming this live. You've come to Macworld. We will help you watch it live.
And also explain what's going on.
Of course, exactly. We'll give you an independent
We'll have literally analysis. Literally ones of experts give an analysis.
Yes, exactly.
And not one of our team will be wearing sort of Gap cargo pants and black Rolex, as all the audience
quite the opposite.
Will be.
I'll be dressed smartly in protest against the cash regime. So they, as I said, they're going to talk about iOS 10 and Mac OS for sure. They may do some other stuff as well. I was looking at the history of WWDC earlier, and in the past they have done some hardware launches. I said it's mostly software, but the modern incarnation of the Mac Pro, the little dustbin, that launched at WWDC in 2013. They once launched an iPhone there Do not expect that this year. But the iPhone 3G actually was unveiled at WWDC, and they occasionally do some MacBooks. And we are due to get a new MacBook Pro, because the MacBook Air got a real sort of half-hearted update very recently, and the 12-inch MacBook,
MacBook Gap will be great. MacBook Gap, as long as it was beige.
That got a fairly decent update, which leaves the MacBook Pro. So I think they probably will unveil something special for the MacBook Pro. They might unveil a new iMac. And the rumor there is that they're going to have AMD graphics chips, AMD Polaris 10 graphics chips.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing there, as you actually pointed out, is that that should make them VR ready. Because, you know, as we were talking about before, VR is a very exciting sector of the tech industry at the moment, and Macs basically are unusable for VR. But if they have Polaris 10 chips, which have been designed specifically to be...
I think that could be huge, because not only will there be crossover between Mac users and VR intenders, but also it just means that if you want to get the kit, if you want to get your HTC Vive, instead of having to go and spec up a PC, you can basically, you know, you'll be able to buy, it'd be expensive, but you can buy an iMac, set it up, and it's all there. And, you know, there will be some, it's not going to be a huge mass market thing, but there will be some cachet and cool about having that.
Well, the design side of it, because I always focus on the gaming side of VR, but I think a lot of people who work in industrial design, for example, are going to use VR to visualize these things, and they would be, I imagine, more likely to be using a Mac.
Well, also creating those experiences as well, because there's a lot of talk about when Oculus was first announced, there were lots of talk in the creative industry about experiences. So if you're trying to sell people houses or cars, You don't physically have all the products there, but you can give them the experience of interacting with those products.
What else? Apple Music may... I've been trying to call it Apple Music 2. Nobody else has not really caught on. But we think it might get a reasonably major sort of primarily visual update. At the moment, it's got a lot of translucency effects in the interface. You remember Johnny Ive's big purge of sort of visual effects, not people. At the moment, Apple Music is kind of busy. So a lot of people think it's going to be cut back. So it'll just be a black and white interface with the artwork for whatever album you're listening to will be big, will be front and center and colorful. But everything around it, the chrome around it, will all be black and white. Make a much simpler interface.
Sounds like an iPod I had about 10 years ago.
Well, these things always
change it way too much.
They go in cycles, don't they?
Yeah. That's good, though. That sounds good.
It sounds good to me, but I don't really...
So do people use Apple Music?
No. Yeah, it's been a moderate success. The funny thing is, among Macworld editors, it's actually got relatively low uptake. We've all tried it, obviously, to know about it. It's got, I think, did it get 10 million subscribers? Pretty early on, but it gave a little knock to Spotify,
right?
Early doors, and then Spotify's come straight back from it, and they're growing again. So it's not been the Spotify killer they hoped for,
right?
And they have definitely made a footprint on the market. They're not Tidal, but this is because it's Apple. You know, Apple have a user base. They have people with iPhones, and people will be naturally pulled into the platform through that.
I was thinking about this. Do you think this is like part of what we're seeing? People buying, they buy iPhones because they want an Apple product, but you also buy an iPhone because you just know. I mean, as indicative of such a large developer conference, that you'll get every single app, and that because you buy an iPhone and then you use Spotify. Do you think that Apple is actually kind of suffering slightly from trying to introduce its own? Its own products in that way. It's nailed the hardware and it's got some of its own apps.
Books. Apple was in that situation with books and tried to compete with Kindle, and then made the sensible decision at a certain point that actually, okay, Kindle's the winner in this particular space, so we'll support Kindle and make money out of Kindle, but we're not going to compete massively.
People read that on iPhones.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't even need a Kindle, but you use Kindle. So
analogy was the word I was looking for. So that's the analogy I would use. Is potentially, I don't know, you guys are the experts, but potentially that's where we are with music streaming.
They put a lot into Apple Music. They've made a real big commitment to it.
And well, because they make a huge amount of money out of selling music, don't they? So,
yeah, well,
they have.
So this is the other rumour. I mean, this is really far out there. Somebody suggested that they're going to stop selling downloads of music and switch entirely to streaming, which is bonkers. You look at the graph of digital music download sales and digital music streaming revenues, and streaming has very recently gone above downloads, and it's clearly going in that direction.
But this is the innovator's dilemma, and this is what Apple has traditionally been really good at, murdering its darlings.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, it's only going one way. Yeah. We'll give away the revenue for the short term in order to maximise market share in the longer term.
But it's still making
billions. Which is what they missed out with on Apple Music.
Yeah, usually. Yeah.
And I think they can update iTunes itself as well in correspondence with that.
Had a little update recently, didn't they? A little interface change. They switched it back to how it used to be. They realised the error of their ways, and it was
iTunes is a dog's dinner at the moment.
Yeah. It always has been, really, though, hasn't it?
Very hard to use.
I mean, I'm hoping to move house soon, and my wife was saying yesterday that when we move to our new house, I'm not going to be allowed to have my CDs on display in the front room. So I think I've reached that point. I principally use iTunes to rip CDs, which is an appalling thing to admit on a technology podcast. I've always thought it was a terrible piece of software to use. Unusual for Apple, because it's actually ugly and difficult to use.
I think early iTunes was okay compared to the rival products. But
yeah, true. Actually true.
Yeah.
The rivals have got better, and they've got feature creep, and they've just made it worse and worse.
Yeah.
It's one of their weakest products at the moment, I would say.
What else are we going to expect at DubDub, as you insist on calling it?
DubDub.
So iOS 10, which might not be as big an update as it has been in the past, because you'll all remember, of course, iOS 9.3 was a biggie. So we think maybe
discussed it in this very podcast.
We certainly did, and we think they're going to get more of a sort of steady stream of point updates. Is they'll have more major features appearing in the 0.9, the 0.3 mini updates, and that means therefore that 10, 11. Won't be as earth-shattering. A lot of people are saying that finally, and this, I suppose, in a way, this would be earth-shattering, is that they might let you hide pre-installed apps, Apple's own apps,
stocks,
exactly. because somebody's found that there's some code that they're adding to all the apps in the App Store, which says is first-party hideable app, and then it says either yes or no, which means that it will therefore be possible for some first-party, i.e. Apple-made apps, to be hidden. And it's still annoying because it's still taking up the
still
space.
Still actually on your device.
Still on your device. But for the OCD people like me who don't like having a home screen with loads of stuff on it that you can't get rid of, then there's that. Well, you've always been able to hide it in a folder and put it on like a third screen.
Yeah, stick
away
it on the next page.
I don't know. But that's something. Maybe dark mode, a whole different interface for when it's the night.
Ninja phone.
But it's like, but you know what I mean? It's like it's better on the eyes. Because we've got night shift at the moment, and we've got auto brightness. And these are various ways in which they make it sort of automatically more of a pleasant experience. Because you do want the screen to look different at night. Like you have with sat navs.
Or you might even be, you might be lying next to your partner.
Well, that's true as well, yeah, exactly. But having a sort of a default interface that is, a black background or whatever could be good for that.
Battery life issues there as well. I've got the Galaxy S7 Edge, and it, by default, whatever you're doing at whatever time of the day, it changes the brightness of the screen. It's really smart. It means the battery lasts loads longer.
I was going to say, we have the auto brightness, but that's not based on ambient light, that's based on the devices.
It's based on what you're doing. So I'm just sort of navigating around the interface, the brightness is like at a third.
Interesting.
But if you're then looking at a website or whatever, it kicks right up to the top, and it's very,
Pretty cool.
Steal that. iOS 11.
Oh, it'll be an iOS 11, I would think,
iPhone 7.
What have we got left? macOS, which is being referred to as Fuji, may only be a code name, or it may be the name of it. Making my predictions. Because that does have a connection to California, but it's not strictly speaking a place in California. It's the name of an Apple which is sold widely in California, but isn't actually even from California. It's originally from Japan, hence the
O.S.
Japanese
Braeburn.
Name.
O.S. Cox is Pippin.
So it, more likely it will be named after a place in California, because that's what all the previous ones have been named.
Yeah. Must be running out of places now, though.
California is a relatively large place.
It's quite a big place, isn't it?
But will that give us Siri on a Mac, and does that matter?
Yes. Probably, and... sort of. It depends if that's an issue. If that's an issue for you.
Worst predictions ever.
I'm better than Paul the Octopus.
He might be back. Is he back for the Euros?
No, he's dead. He died. Yeah. He died almost after his moment of triumph.
No, he did get it right.
He got it. He got them all right, didn't he?
He fulfilled everything. His destiny.
Yeah. He didn't see his own death coming anyway. But I think a lot of people would like to have Siri on the Mac. It would make a lot of sense. It's just one of those things. Some people hate Siri. Some people don't use Siri at all. It's taken me a while to come to love Siri, because you have to learn about the things that it's good at. Like, you start off trying to do all the marquee features, and it's not good at that. What it's good for is just set a reminder for tomorrow. It's all the little bits where you'd have to, you know, do three or four clicks to get to the right app and set something up, and it's really annoying.
I think it worked well for, like, hermits. I just can't bring myself to doing it when other people are around.
Yeah. But that's better. That's better for the Mac. Because a Mac, you could be in an office, you could be at home. Yeah. An iPhone, you're nearly always out and about, aren't you? So
true.
For that side of it, it's probably better.
Cool. So we can follow all of this Apple shiz next week on Macworld UK.
Macworld.co.uk.
Yeah. I was saying the name, you said the URL. They were both
Brilliant.
Correct. Excellent. Let's ever so quickly go around the room. The options are dub dub glee tee hee or dub dub WC. Henry Burrell.
Dub dub glee tee hee.
Excellent. Beautiful tone.
Thank
there.
You.
David Price.
Clearly dub dub glee tee hee.
A bit more energy would be nice, I think. Lewis Painter.
Dub dub glee tee.
Nice.
Went a bit high pitch.
A bit more energy.
No, he though.
A higher pitch.
Tee.
Oh, there we go. it was integrated.
All I can say is thanks to the listener for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Do get in touch to let us know your thoughts and opinions, and to shake us down for cash, or indeed if you're interested in advertising or for any reason other than death threats. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idguk. We will be back next week with more informed and some uninformed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. So until then, say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye. UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.